Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
What's going on, people? Welcome to Paint Points. As usual, I'm your host, Jake Painting. This podcast is proudly brought to you by the SB Nation Podcast Network and the Tainus Hoopers family. I know I've been missing action for a few weeks. Life has been kicking my ass, but we are back. Going to frame this one as a quarterly review of the season. There are 23 games through the season as we sit here right now, coming off the back of back-to-back losses to the Washington Wizards and the Brooklyn Nets. But overall, it's been a really positive season so far, and I am here with the positive vibe master himself, editor-in-chief at Tainus Hoopers, Kyle Tighe. What's going on, dude?
What's up, dude? Big morning for you.
No, it is 4 a.m. here while we record.
I was going to say, it's like 9 in the morning on the West Coast. I have to set that. I have a special clock in my phone just for you, so I can, like, when you text me or message me, I'm like, what time is it for that guy? Liverpool just beat the other Wolves, so I think Jake doesn't have a shirt on right now. It was a pretty crazy soccer game. But no, yeah, it's been. We haven't talked in a couple of weeks, and I think the last time we did a pod was right around that losing streak, which was kind of gave everyone fits and kind of was like, oh shit, same old Wolves, here we go again. What are we going to talk about come January? But they've rebounded nicely, literally. Like, they grab rebounds. It's kind of fun.
Yeah, and the rest. It's been strange and confusing, and I don't know what to do with my hands when I see the Timberwolves kind of being semi-relevant. Even with this little downslide that they're on right now, I think they're definitely in a great position in the Western Conference. I think what we're going to do today is just throw a few things out there. The first one is, what has surprised you the most in this season, be it good, bad, the start of the season where it was kind of ugly, or this later part of the current season where it's been pretty positive vibes kind of flowing through the team. So give me your surprising take of the season.
Well, I think the easiest answer is defense, right? Like, you've written about it extensively. We've written about it at Canis. I know Dane and Britton. It's been like the topic. That's kind of my answer as well. But I think just more than anything, it's just, I've used the word grit like 5 times in tweets the last couple of weeks. But I think just seeing a team that, like, and you're my stats guy. I mean, you see the game better than I do. But just like, so tell me if I'm wrong. But offensively, they're not that awesome right now. Like, they're just, no one's blowing it away. Like, no one, we don't have Malik Beasley hitting, 4 threes a night for an extended period of time. Like, D'Lo's shot has been, I think Jim Pete said on the broadcast last night, he's shooting a career low. But this team just stays in games because they're mentally tough. Like, they play, they're a representation on the court of who Chris Finch is, never too high, never too low. And they just grind. Like, they're just gritty. After the game last night against the Brooklyn Nets, even Kevin Durant and James Harden both complimented the Wolves' defense and was like, they just wanted to muck it up. And that's awesome. Like, I would much rather think of all those years where, like, okay, the Wolves are going to have to score 140 and just out sprint their opponent. That's not
really. That was meant to be this year.
Yeah.
That was meant to be this year. That's what we all expected.
But that's not, I don't know about you, but like, from a basketball nerd, like, that's not actually that fun. Because if you don't have it one night, that's how you get blown out of the building. Like, if you can't hit 140, but your opponent can, that's how you see a 135-102 loss. And the Wolves, again, were 23 games in the season. Offensively, they're just not that dynamic. I mean, they're inching their way up there or whatever, but the defense has just been awesome. They're just so physical, even though they are one of the shorter rosters in the league, one of the thinner rosters in the league. And you've seen it from guys like D'Angelo Russell, even, who's been a little more physical on ball and just putting himself on the floor a little bit for more loose balls. And then it all kind of starts, obviously, at the top with I think your – have you adopted him yet? Jared Vanderbilt, your son.
So, if I could, I would.
So I don't know who his agent is, but I mean, that was really one of the biggest reflection points for me, is just looking back at like how no one in the league wanted that guy. And obviously the sample size on him was pretty small, but for the Wolves to, you know, get Vando for what they got him at, I mean, just a moment of silence for Gersan Rosas, wherever he is right now humping things, like shout out to him, because that dude really left them a present on his way out. So yeah, it's the defense, but to me it's more of just like, not the X's and O's, not the shift, or, you know, the switches, not the zone. It's just like the mental toughness at this team, because it's pretty much the same. You know, it's been kind of ironic, right? They played the Nets last night and the Wizards the night before. Both of those teams have assistant coaches that were supposed to be the Wolves defensive coordinator, right? Blair for the Wizards on Wednesday, and then Vanderpool last night against the Nets. They got rid of both those guys, and they haven't really missed a beat. They don't have a bunch of new players. They're just kind of like buying into Chris Finch's defensive schemes more, and it's been awesome. So that was a big, long-winded, coffee-inspired talk about defense, but I just think this team, for better or worse, just fucking cares, and they give a shit, and they're not going to let you push them around, even though they don't have a bunch of huge guys. And it was really noticeable in the Philly game, because the Philly game was the closest thing I've seen to like a game, like a Tim Donaghy scandal. I mean, you heard about the officiating in the Philly Wolves game on like Russillo's pod and like Bill Simmons' pod. And it's just like, wow, old Wolves would have gotten their asses kicked in that game by 30, and they just grinded it out. They didn't complain about the officiating too much. And that was the biggest example of new Wolves to me. I took like 9 minutes there to just say, I think the team is tough. There you go.
No, but you're right. Like, they are tough. And I dig how it all just like mashes up and combines, where it's not simply guys trying more. It's not simply Chris Finch being, you know, a better defensive coach and deploying a better defensive scheme. It's not just Pat Beverley being like this great shepherd of defensive identities. It's all of it. It's not Jared Vanderbilt being the best defender that's ever walked planet Earth. It's everyone and everything is flowing together. And from that, you see this super surprising defense that now doesn't seem so surprising, because all these pieces are kind of in your face now, if that makes sense. Like, and it's like, well, why didn't we see this? Why didn't we see that Jared Vanderbilt, because the dirty little secret is he was this good defensively last season, or maybe slightly worse, but he was really good defensively last season. He just played on a shitty team, and all the numbers were similar, all the on and off numbers, all the, you know, catch-all metrics, which don't fully encompass what defense is. But when you play on a team where everyone starts to buy into that Jared Vanderbilt mentality, and by extension, I guess, the Patrick Beverley mentality, this shit stands out so much more. And I just love that Finch has come in, finally, you know, put the drop steam in the trash. You've got Cat is playing better defensively, but simply because he doesn't have to do as much. He can just do the bare minimum, kind of, and not in a bad way, but just that's how the scheme is. Just get him up at the level and then get back to the man when you have a chance. I just love it, man. I love the way the defense is. That's obviously, when you're talking about surprises, that's the number one surprise for the season, because it's still like pinch myself surreal, because every night you think, all right, like this is the game. Even against the Wizards, they kind of let go of the rope, and you think this is the game that it all turns to shit. And then they come back the next night against the Brooklyn Nets, juggernaut Brooklyn Nets, who even sans Kyrie Irving can easily drop 140 on a team that isn't there to play defense hard. And like you said, the result is that they lost, unfortunately, but Kevin Durant and James Harden are talking about Minnesota's defense after the game. And like, what better kind of praise can you get, and what more of a swing from what we expected can you get than that, really?
Yeah, and I mean, going back to the defense and the surprise and all that stuff, I think, you know, we deserve like credit for like surviving what was one of the worst off seasons ever, right? I mean, just from a bare bones, there's no pick, there's no real big transactions, the whole front office turmoil, but they're doing this with the same guys. Like, that's the thing that really gets me is like, it's more impressive, I think, sometimes. It's really easy to go get a bunch of new players and bring them in, and we haven't watched those players as closely and like, oh shit, I didn't know that player was as good. That's not what's going on here. These are just like I think of a guy like Malik Beasley, who is also struggling offensively. You kind of wrote about this in your player grades a little bit, but he pretty much nuked the Wolves on Friday against the Nets. I mean, he took some of the worst shots down the stretch. I mean, he at least, you know, took them. It wasn't like
he's not afraid to take them, that's for sure.
Right, and that's, but that's like a characteristic of guys you kind of want, right? Like the whole classic live by the three, die by the three. I mean, you kind of live by Malik and die by Malik sometimes. But yeah, I mean, he took some egregious shots last night and was one of the reasons they lost. But I also think of that like chase down block he had on Kevin Durant towards the end of the game too, where it was like, I don't think Malik still really knows what he's doing defensively, but if you at least watch him, like he's busting his ass, running through screens, calling out assignments on the backside, like he's trying. And to see Chris Finch get guys to just elevate their game, I mean, how many different articles and newsletters could you write about the D'Angelo Russell experience this year, right? Like the stats that, and the stats back it up. And even like from a national perspective, you're kind of hearing guys give him a little more credit. But yeah, I think that's been more enjoyable for me. It's just like, we haven't gotten new ingredients. It's the same ingredients that we had last year. It's just Chris Finch is really, really good at cooking them up and kind of figuring out where to put these guys.
And getting them to buy in. That's the thing is, I think that like with Kat and with D'Lo, they're so obviously, you know, the kind of guys that they don't trust the scheme. Not that they didn't try defensively, because I hate that narrative, especially with Kat, because I thought sometimes his problem was he tried too hard. D'Lo, you know, definitely had spells where he didn't try under Saunders. But, like, just getting them to buy in and realize all it took was a game or two or three or four, and all of a sudden it was like, all right, this shit works, man. Like,
yep.
If we all buy in, this is going to keep working. And D'Angelo Russell is like the personification of this shit is working. Let's, you know, ratchet it up a notch and try 10% harder and then try 10% harder the next night. Like, he is genuinely good on defense. I don't care about defensive rating. It's a shit stat. Like, but I care about like what I see, and what I had seen with D'Lo was a guy who was pretty willing to give up on any given possession, and then try and get it back with a pull up three or with a nifty pass. But like this season, his rotations are so good. Like, he's always been a smart player offensively, and you know, a witty kind of guy in the passing lanes as well. But like every game, I am in awe of how he's like quarterbacking the defense. You've got Vanderbilt and Okogie and McDaniels out there who do all the do shit stuff where they, you know, finish the possession with the block or grab the rebound or kind of get a hand up in someone's face. But like D'Lo is the puppet master pulling those strings, and it's really obvious to see, and it's starting to get picked up by national guys and by, you know, big podcasts, Zach Lowe. It's got to the level where it's like, this isn't a fleeting moment anymore. This is, D'Angelo Russell might just be good on defense. Weird as that is to say.
Did you see last night? I know you did. I want you to nerd out a little bit since it's like, you know, 5 a.m. for you. Did you see a couple of those spurts last night where he's like just straight on ball defense against James Harden? And
yeah,
like, and correct me if I'm wrong. I mean, I might have had a glass or seven of wine, but like, what, like James Harden couldn't get by D'Angelo Russell. Like, there was like three different times where D'Lo just kind of was like, I mean, I can't remember exactly how the play ended. I think maybe one or two of them got Harden to the free throw line because he got a damn near similar whistle last night to what Joel Embiid got against the Wolves. But I mean, I've just never seen Russell really accept the challenge of like, okay, this is an isolation. I'm just going to put my hands down and I'm just going to move my feet. I think that's like the biggest complaint about Russell his first couple of years in Minnesota was just, he didn't seem like he even just wanted to move his feet. And it's like, dude, you have such long arms for a point guard. If you would just do the bare minimum, you would be like a, oh, like, you know, not even a good defender, not even an average, but you're not going to like just capsize the team's defense. And that goes back into what you said about buying in. So I think sometimes think about like every player's worst moments, right? Like when you think of Carl, his worst moments are when he's just bitching about fouls, laying on the ground, not getting back. And it kind of like burns into your retinas. I think with Russell, the worst moments are some of the shots he takes that are contested. And he's a good contested shot maker. But, you know, when they go in, it's like, no, yes. But when they don't go in, it's like, Jesus Christ, that was abysmal. But it's also, too, like, I think about some of those times where, like, he's in transition on defense. And, like, he doesn't make any effort whatsoever to, like, take a hard foul. Or he just really gives up layups. And I think that's why sometimes we're like, man, he is so piss poor defensively. But then you watch those moments against Harden or just like you said, the quarterbacking, he really is. And you hear this through the TV, but you also hear anyone who goes to a game that covers it. They say D'Angelo Russell just, and I mean this positively, he just never shuts up. He's constantly talking on the floor. He's constantly standing on the bench and talking. He's really like adopted being a leader, right? And he should be because he's making $30 million. It's a contract year for him. So yeah, I think we just did about 32 minutes on what was the most surprising thing, but I just think it's really fun to watch this team. I never go into a game now thinking they're going to get blown out, which says a lot more about me and you than it does about the team probably, but I just think without sounding really cliche, the thing our dads told us, that defense wins championships. Wolves aren't winning any championships, maybe for the rest of my life, but defense, you can play good defense for 82 games. You cannot. I mean, we saw Steph Curry do it in Phoenix the other night. You can't always be offensively on your game. You just can't drop 40 every night. So if you can just have a baseline defense, we're going to bring this everywhere we go. We're going to bring it to Target Center 41 nights a year. It makes it more enjoyable for the fans, and it just increases your expectations and gives you a chance in every game. I mean, I try to not think about that losing streak, but since then, like, that I want to ask you this because we haven't talked about this yet. Like that Philly game after the Charlotte loss, and that was they look so shitty against Charlotte. Every year we've covered the Wolves before that, they would have gone into Philadelphia and just gotten murdered, right? Like that, I almost didn't even think about watching the game. Like, there's no chance. They have no chance. And for them to toughen that game out is just kind of incredible. It's like the Bucks win from earlier in the season. It's like, okay, they're going to go play the Bucks. They have no chance. And they just did it with defense, they did it with grit. And that's why
it was ironic that it ended on a defensive possession, a really good defensive possession. Like, it was fitting, not ironic. Yep. It was fitting because, like, that's what the Wolves are at the moment, is a team that plays good enough defense where their offense can scrape by and keep them in a game. And again, against Brooklyn in that last game, it was a good example of why tough defense works in the NBA. Like, you go in there without Cat. I wrote about it in the player ratings. That's a scheduled loss, and it ends in a scheduled loss, but it's all the things in between the start of the game when I knew it was a scheduled loss and the end of a game when it was a scheduled loss was so encouraging, even without Towns, because with your best player out, you can still play defense, and you can still hang with these teams, and Brooklyn are really, really good, and they ended up, you know, scraping over the line because they have Kevin Durant, and he's a fucking basketball scoring genius, but like, they were in that game because they play defense, and that's, like you said, they just don't get blown out anymore because they play defense. Even in their bad games, they were bad on defense against Washington, and they had to try and live by their offense, and they lost pretty comfortably. I guess it was only, you know, whatever, 7-8 points, but it felt like a pretty comfortable loss. But when they bring it defensively, and they're bringing it, you know, on 90% of the nights, they're tough to beat, and that's all you can. That's what a 500 team is. Like, I think a lot of the time people act like the sky is falling after a loss, and I've been culpable of that as well. But like,
thank you for admitting
500
it.
Teams lose, you know, like, and I don't even think that. I think they could be a, you know, game or two under 500, and that means you're going to lose 53% of the nights that you play.
And you know, just to touch on this, since we're going to just, I guess, talk about every game that they won because we're so excited. But, you know, it was also defense that won them the Heat game, right? They gave up 39 points in the second half to the Heat. And they just, I mean, the Miami Heat, right? Heat culture, all that shit.
And like, the Heat weren't sleepwalking through that game, man. Like, they might not have been as pumped as the Target Center crowd was, but, like, Jimmy Butler wants to bury the Timberwolves, and you know his pulse kind of emanates through that team. So, like, they wanted to win that game, man, and Joel Embiid wanted to win that game when he had 40 in his first game back for weeks. Like, these aren't, you know, those games kind of like the end of last season when you point to them and you think, like, were they real? Because these teams are sleepwalking through these games. Like, the Miami Heat wanted to butcher the Wolves, and Joel Embiid, you know, kind of fucks up the Wolves every time he plays them. So it was just both of those games. They might be two of my favorite wins, you know, since the Denver game 82. They probably are my favorite two. Just that was just, you know, the fan base is so electric as well when this team gets going on a run like that and beats a team that the whole fan base kind of dislikes as a collective for different reasons. But man, I love when this team and this fan base kind of really combines to like become this rolling ball of excitement. I just love it, man.
Well, and I think let's not talk about defense anymore. I don't even know if anyone's still listening to this pod at this point, but it is one more thing I want to talk about from like a surprising standpoint, and maybe it'll get into a lecture by you and I. But I just think going back to the grit or the mental toughness thing, the Timberwolves haven't had those things for as long as you and I can remember, right? Like, for as long as we've been covering the team. And for better or worse, I mean, like, if you don't have mental toughness or you don't have grit or whatever, you're basically... it's just another way of kind of saying you're soft. And I'm not necessarily saying any one player. It's just kind of the vibe. You and I are big vibe guys. The vibe was just for years, like, you know, if you're playing up to a contender's level for a night, that contender will just be like, kind of like, you know, after a couple quarters, like, you like when a dog is kind of jumping at you, you just kind of like push it down, or just kind of like sit down. That's all the Wolves needed, to just sit down. Like, just kind of just pop them in the, not even the mouth, just pop them in the chest once, and they'll go lay down. They're done. The Wolves are
LeBron's
done.
LeBron's been doing that to the Wolves for years. LeBron's been cruising through three quarters of a game for years and then just like easily beating them in the fourth.
Right, yeah. I mean, a lot of good teams and good players have used the first 36 minutes of a basketball game to just get their cardio in, and then they'll go 2 or 3 minutes in the fourth, pop the Wolves in the chest once, maybe softly in the jaw, and it's over, and we're all disappointed. That's what's new about this team. And I know we're only 23 games in. If you're listening to this and you watch every single game through the lens and the scar tissue of 30 years of Timberwolves dysfunction, I don't have anything fucking for you. That seems like a miserable way to live your life. Don't talk to me. But, like, I think this team is really different because of the 30-minute rant we just did on defense. They have this new baseline of they're not really – I mean, just say it. Like, say it, because people respect you more than they respect my basketball takes. They're not good offensively right now. Like, they're not hitting shots, so they can't rely on just going into the Hawks game on Monday at home and just being like, yeah, you know, we'll probably get 85 combined from D'Lo, Towns, and Russell. That's not happening right now. This isn't that – Towns Edwards, you know, 84 point game in Phoenix last season. They just have to bring their defense every night. It really is like blue collar, hard hat type shit. And that's why I think, you know, so they're 11-12. I think this is a good point to bring that up again. I think that's like that would equate to be like a 39.5 wins. You know, if you just kind of extrapolated it out. So, you know, prior to the loss in Brooklyn, right? They were 500. I mean, I think we sometimes get so caught up in like a bad loss or like, you know, the Wizards game was frustrating, right? Because they had it and they just kind of let go. As Dane says, they let go of the rope. Same with the Brooklyn game, right? Like, they had a lead down the stretch. And I think I tweeted this out, like, they scored one basket in the final 5:25. So again, they kind of let go of the rope. But if you were to tell me like back in September that this team was going to be 500, I mean, that's a 41-win team. I don't think they're going to win 41 games, but if they even win 39 or 38, they're going to make the playoffs, whether that's the play-in game or the playoffs or whatever. But I mean, the West, this is something you and I think Jack Borman talked about too this summer. Like, the West was way overinflated for what people thought. I mean, look at the Western standings right now. There's kind of like a hard cap of 10 teams. The Wolves just have to be better than five of those teams, and the Thunder lost by a million the other night. So I really think, like, if you can pull yourself up and do the D'Lo stance of never too high, never too low, like, it is exciting to get amped after those Sixers wins or those Heat wins. But I think if you can also not get too bummed about hard-fought losses. I mean, not every loss is the same old Timberwolves. That's kind of where my point is,
yeah.
Right? Like,
yeah, that's what I've been kind of, my inner monologue has been telling me that every game, because it's just it isn't, and there's too many factors pointing in the direction that they are not like a, you know, 25 win team that's overperforming. They're just like a middle of the pack team that's playing like a middle of the pack team. And like I said, middle of the pack teams lose games. They lose games against the Brooklyn Nets. They lose them against the Wizards, who are 14-8 or something. Like, they probably lose them against the Hawks, and they have 3-game losing streaks, but they also, they beat the teams they should beat more often than they don't. And like, that is the important thing. And like you said, when you look at the West, man, like, I'm at the point, like you said, I'm still, the scar tissue will never fade away until, you know, we get a consistent run of winning. But like, I'm scared that the Wolves will let this slip, only because I think it is so there for the taking.
And that, like, that's fine.
They just
that's
need to
fine.
Be better than the Kings. They just need to be better than the Kings. Like, if the goal is to make the play-in game, and it is, and I think they should be aiming a little higher than that, like a, you know, 9th, 8th, 7th, maybe 6th seed. But if the goal is to be in the top 10, they just need to be better than the Kings. The Pelicans could kind of make some noise if Zion comes back this century. I don't know if he will. I don't even know if they're too far behind to do that. But like, if you're better than the Kings and the Pelicans, which is not a high bar, like, you can, Naz Reid could have jumped over this bar in his first season. It's not a high bar. Then they're a play-in team. So that, as long as they get to that, and I think they can be way better than that. Like, the expectations kind of seem like they're almost met already, unless a major collapse is coming, which, like I said, I am still scared of a little bit.
And that's fine, right? Because they did have that losing streak, and things seemed so dreary. And then they came back, and they beat good teams in that winning streak. I get that. I don't think I'm criticizing that. I'm just more so criticizing, like, Anthony, it's been a take for a while, but Anthony Edwards has nothing to do with David Kahn or Joe Smith or Tom Thibodeau or any of that stuff, right? Like, some of these guys don't need to have the baggage that maybe you and I have as fans. So when they got blown out by Charlotte, I think I'm on the record of texting you this. Like, I wasn't that upset about it. It was a bad loss. They looked like shit, and they should have been criticized as such that night. But then it was like, you know what? Like, this team might, they might go into Philly on the second night of a back-to-back and, like, fuck them up a little bit. And they did.
Yeah.
And it didn't happen the way maybe we thought, but they did it. So I just – if you watch the Wolves win a couple games, or if they come in on Monday night against Atlanta and they look really good and they win and they're back to 12-12, and you tell me, or you tweet at me, like, well, do it in the playoffs. Like, I'll wait till April. Like, you're muted. Like, I don't see it anymore, because it's just like, what? That's not what this is about either, right? Like, I'm not just closing my eyes and waiting 4 months to see if they're going to be, you know, upset the Warriors in the first round of the playoffs, because they're not. But it really is the first time. And again, too, if they go lose the next 10 games, we'll hop on a pod again and talk massive shit about them. But it really,
yeah, and that's how it works.
It really is like the first time you're seeing through 23 games, which is a fairly large sample size. I mean, like you said, we're more than a quarter of the way through the season, and the season's only going to get easier. I know we've talked about the December schedule, and it is a gauntlet. But then I think they
wait to these wait to those January days, man. They're going to be sweet.
As soon
if this team can just hold up for through December,
as soon
like,
as
there's a chance they just cement that playoff play-in spot in January.
As soon as my New Year's Eve hangover wears off, I'm 33 now, so hangovers can take multiple days. But I think like January 3rd through like the 15th, like they have like two Thunder games, a Pelicans game, like January, it does get easier. And then you have to expect that the Wolves, under no circumstances, barring any injuries, knock on wood, will be tanking. So that last month of the schedule is like, who knows what the Denver Nuggets are going to look like, right? Like, some of those teams might just be throwing in the towel as well. So I just think that this is the first time in a long time, you and I started covering this team kind of at the same time, 5-6 years ago. Like, they're not building like a house of cards. Like, they're building like a – they're trying to build something like with a real concrete foundation, and you're seeing that now. Because the house of cards, you could just – like I said earlier, you can, you know, blow on it and it'll fall over, and that's the same old Timberwolves. This team has real foundation things that they're building. The roster's still not great. They still lack shooting. You know, I think Sasha and Gupta would like to make a couple deals, and we'll see what happens come, you know, even, what is it, December 15th, when more players are eligible to be traded. I think the Wolves could maybe be low-key buyers in terms of trying to add a piece, because, like I said, their front court is still kind of thin, and if they do lose a guy like Towns to an injury for a while, or if a D'Lo, they're pretty naked behind them over an extended period of time. So, yeah, I just – it's been fun. I'm guessing people can get that by now, right? Like, it's just been a fun team to cover. Even when they were fucking bad for that week and a half, it was like, okay – Who's gonna step up here? And then they not only did they just like end the losing streak, which is what the Wolves have always done, right? They lose eight in a row and then they win a game, but then they go lose four more. Like for them to rebound from a losing streak and then flip it into a winning streak and have the second or just winning streak at the time in the West was pretty cool. So I don't know. That was my take on that. I just don't think you can. Don't be scared if the Wolves are fun. You know what I mean? Just enjoy it. I think this is a different level of fun. We talk about new Wolves versus old Wolves. I think this is a really different mentality. And obviously it starts with Patrick Beverley, but it some of those other guys deserve credit too, right? Like, this isn't all Patrick Beverley. Patrick Beverley went out in the Miami Heat game.
I was going to say, I think the Pat Beverley, I've said it before and I kind of go back and forth on it, but I think the Pat Beverley culture changer is like slightly overblown. And that's not to say that it isn't a thing. It's definitely a thing. D'Lo talking like, you know, a madman defensively is probably based on Beverley somewhat. But like that, it does a disservice to the rest of these guys who are doing things of their own volition, you know, to just blame it all on Pat Beverley, a 33-year-old kind of defensive player. Like, it does them a disservice because everyone deserves credit, and especially the coaching staff and the quote unquote big three, which is becoming less and less quote unquote every time they win. Everyone deserves credit. And like you said, I think that was perfect what you said, that they're building a foundation now, and to reverse this back to the original point of the, you know, start of the conversation, is that foundation being on defense is so, so encouraging, because like, we knew that they could play offense, and like, I don't know if they're going to have to get like some sort of therapist or genie or, you know, shaman to come in and help these guys shoot the fucking ball better, but like, we know they can play offense. The fact that they can survive defensively and build that foundation that you speak of on the defensive end just gives them so much room to grow. There's no hard ceiling anymore on this team where it's like, oh yeah, they're good, or they're average, but that's because they're the eighth best offense, but they can't play defense. Like, they're the Portland Trailblazers, you know, they can't play defense, so it's never going to amount to anything. And you see what's happening with the Blazers this season. I know they have some mitigating circumstances as well with Dame, but like, they're bad, or they're worse than the Wolves. I would say that they're, you know, on that level, but probably a little bit worse, and especially while Dame is kind of got one foot out the door and been a little bit injured this season, but like, they're so bad on defense that they just cannot survive offensively, and the Kings are the same. So like, you flip that with the Wolves and eventually you feel like they're going to work it out offensively, and that's now, but they've got their foundation set as a team that really comes at you defensively, and now they, you know, now it's time to buy into that as a fan base as well, which I think the majority are definitely, you know, fairly bought in.
Yeah, there's this guy I really like to follow on Twitter. It's at Jake Painting. And back on November 26th, he had this really good tweet where it's like, it's just going to be so hard to win without Pat Beverley. And then
shouldn't tweet, man.
And I'm pulling all the receipts. And then they went off and they
absolutely
won.
Absolutely publicly flamed me.
and then they went off
in the morning,
won,
dude.
Then they went it's off and won the best game ever in that Philly game. So I'm with you. I think the Patrick Beverley thing is real, because I said this before when we recorded, but I got to, you know, go to media day, and like, he was already making an impact then. And you see him on the sidelines, you see him standing up, you see him in the huddles, like even in street clothes, right? Like, it's clearly an effect. But I think what you're saying, and that's why you're correct, is like, some of these guys, like, it can't just all be Patrick Beverley. Cause when he went out, again, old Wolves, new Wolves, when he went out was in the Miami game. And that was the most hyped I think I called it the biggest game in Timberwolves history since that since they hosted game
Talk
four.
Talk about overreacting.
No, but I think it's like sadly true, right? That was the biggest game because they have no big game because they've been so shitty since they like had game four of the playoffs at home against the Rockets. I mean, because they don't play meaningful basketball games. And they lost Pat Bev like, what, 5 minutes into that game? And if it was all Patrick Beverley, the house would have just blown down again. And they out-gritted and out-grinded the Heat without Beverley. They did the same thing in Philadelphia. Even that Indiana game, which was like...
I was going to say, they did the same thing in Indiana. Indiana have been playing pretty bad, but like that's a team that comes in and just wipes the floor with the Wolves and have done it recently with that exact same roster. Like I came into the game still expecting that to be one of the ones that the Wolves just let slip by, and like they toughed it out. And it's like, yes, Pat Beverley has instilled some of that culture, but like these guys still need to go and do it. And now they're going and doing it without him. And that proves that whether he kind of injected it into their bloodstream or not, that they are living it. They're living in that Beverley kind of mentality. And I think that comes more from within them than it comes from Beverley kind of standing on the sidelines and barking orders.
Well, and it's good too, right? Because Pat Bev is going to be a free agent this summer. His value has been shown to be far more valuable to the Wolves than probably, you know, he would be to any other franchise. I mean, this team still does need him. And I think I don't really want to talk about any of this right now because I think it might low key be depressing or scary to start talking about, you know, like are you going to pay D'Angelo Russell another 4-year contract? You know, like what's going to happen this summer? I think summer 2022 is going to give us a lot of content, but it's also going to give us a lot of ups and downs. So I'm not ready yet to talk about what kind of deal a guy like Pat Bev can get who's older, and I don't know how well his body's going to hold up. But again, that's kind of why it's exciting that this team with him on the sidelines can still have that same toughness on the court as they would if he was on the court with them. So, dude, let me pivot quick.
Let's take a quick break and then we'll come back, because if we don't, we never will. All right, so we'll be back in a few seconds after some ad breaks. What's going on, people? Jake here, just popping in before the ad break to let you guys know there is a special holiday offer over at Howls and Drows at the moment. You've heard me ramble on about the Substack. It's where I do all my writing, the video analysis, the extras and O's breakdowns. I really want to see as much people as I can over there, and that's why I'm kind of offering this special deal at the moment. Instead of $40 a year, you can get the paid version of the website for $20 a year, and instead of $3.75 per month, you can get it for $2.50 per month, US dollars. So head over there, subscribe. I hope to see you all over there in the comments section, and we're really building a good community over there. So thanks, guys, and yeah, head over and subscribe to howsanddrows.substack.com or check out the link in the bio. Thanks.
Hi, this is Scott Galloway, professor of marketing at NYU Stern School of Business and host of the Prof G Pod. If you don't know me, the New York Times calls me the Howard Stern of business. Gary Swisher, super friggin' insightful, and Elon Musk, an insufferable numbskull. I think we're going to make up. I think we're going to go somewhere and do ketamine together. Each week on my show, the Prof G Pod, we bring you insights from blue flame thinkers, including my nemesis, Adam Grant. Super smart guy. My nemesis because he's really good. Or one of our favorite journalists, Fareed Zakaria. Fareed's a total gangster. And not only that, we provide listeners with a markets-driven episode every Monday. We answer our listeners' questions about business, big tech, and career pivots every Wednesday, and get to listen to the sweet sound of George Hahn reading our newsletter every Saturday. That's right. The Prop G Pod is in your feeds 4 times a week. I'm like AOL in the 90s. To resist is futile. Put your hand into a box of cereal. Is it a tasty, sugary snack? Nope. It's the dog.
All right, we are back. You were about to unload a question on me. I could feel it in your voice.
No, because you always bring, you know, we balance each other well. So like I said, I did call you out about that just horrendous tweet about how the Wolves would never win again.
I'll never forgive you.
But you also bring a lot of brevity to the situation. What's something that, like, again, for the 9 millionth time, Jake just sees the game with, like, better vision than I do? What's something that you've been disappointed in? Like, what's something that, like, this season, like, not gone the way I wanted it?
Maybe there's a few things, and I don't think that's, you know, being kind of downtrodden, because that's just what happens. Like I said, with 500 teams, there are disappointing aspects of a 500 team. Maybe it's recency bias, but I've just struggled to find Malik Beasley enjoyable this season. And I know that he has taken steps defensively, but kind of taking steps to be an average defender from a terrible one isn't something that I'm like on the rooftops shouting about. I know he's taking a few steps as a playmaker as well. Again, going from awful to okay is great, and it does help the team. But like, the dude is paid to shoot the ball, and like I understand that he was in prison, man, and I don't understand that, because I was not in prison, but like, I imagine that is difficult to get back from and just kind of waltz into a season from a prison sentence. Like, that's understandable, but like, the basketball, the hoop, you know, the court doesn't have any fucking sympathy for if you're in shape or not. We saw it with Ricky Rubio. We saw it with Juancho. Like, it ruined, doing that Adam Sandler movie ruined Juancho's NBA career. Like, that's a fact.
That's a really, really good take.
He will never play again.
And I don't disagree.
Like, he will never be in a rotation again. And that's because he had a chance. And maybe it's not all because he did the movie, but like, he came back out of shape. He flushed his season down the toilet. And now he sits on Boston's bench doing nothing, probably talking to Ennis Freedom about politics. You know, like, that's the kind of shit that not being in shape does. Like, Malik Beasley will probably never be an NBA starter again unless he has a resurgence in the second half of this season, be it with the Timberwolves or any other team. Like, I understand why he wasn't, but I just can't give him sympathy, just like the ball wasn't giving him sympathy when it clanks off the rim. And when he plays like he did against the Brooklyn Nets, that was just like an encompassing of what his season's been, and that's just pressing. Like, I know Finch likes to use that word a lot, that they were pressing early in the season and now they've kind of, you know, let the game come to them a little bit more, but Malik's still pressing. And like, last night he shot 14 threes. I know Kat was out, but he shot 14 threes, man, and hit four of them. Like, he's meant to be the spark plug off the bench. He's not been a spark plug. He can't hit shots. He's got no juice off the dribble as a scorer. He's purely a shot maker. Chris Finch runs his best sets for Malik Beasley, and maybe that's another reason why, is just because I love the X's and O's side of the Timberwolves and of basketball, and I watched Chris Finch just kind of laying out these masterpieces just for Malik Beasley to brick it. And I don't know, I know I'm going in on him, and I think that he's still a valuable piece, because eventually I do feel like he's going to start hitting more shots, but like, I'm scarred by Ricky Rubio and I'm scarred by Juancho, that it's a lot harder to play yourself into shape when you're traveling every other day, you know, when you're barely practicing, when you're playing 25 minutes a night and it's sporadic, kind of. Some nights he might play 15, other nights he might play 30. Like, it's hard to just play yourself back into shape. Ricky Rubio needed a full offseason, and now look what he's doing with Cleveland. Like, I'm not sure that he ever gets out of this funk, and I think the Wolves, if they want to make like sixth seed kind of noise, I think he needs to get out of this funk. And he keeps breaking it for one game. He hits 6 out of 8 threes, and it's like, all right, Malik Beasley's back. There was a 3-game stretch, I feel like, where I might have even tweeted like, Malik Beasley's all the way back. But he's not, because he's out of shape still. Or he wasn't in shape, and he was out of rhythm. And rhythm might be harder to get than fitness.
It's crazy, because all great points. I don't think the pandemic, not anything specific about it, but like, I don't think the whole pandemic and everything we've gone through over the last almost 2 years has, like, again, this is all about basketball, so just hear me out. But I don't think it affected anyone weirder than like Malik, right? Because when we were all like quarantined back in like summer of 2020, and we were just shut down at home, I remember like daily Malik posts of him working out 12 yeah. times a day. Like, somehow in between bicep curls, he was just doing more bicep curls. And he has a home gym, and he has like a court. A lot of these guys do. They have houses with half basketball courts at their place so they can get shots up. And he was jacked. I mean, I was too. I built a gym in my garage.
Well, like, I put on like 10 kilos, so I don't know what you're talking about.
Well, it's like, all I could do was just work out. I couldn't even, like, things were closed. And then, you know, we kind of, like, he had his whole legal situation, and then he was thrown in prison, and it affected his whole offseason again. And I know this, again, from either talking to people or else seeing him. When he got out of prison, I think he might have been on, like, kind of, you know, a little loose. Like, I think, you know what I mean? Like, he was
free. I think he looked it as well, like.
Right, I mean, you could see alcohol in his cheeks, basically. I mean, he just looked a little puffier. Like, he looked like he got stung by a bee. And again, I think he's been, for the most part, behaved since he got out. I think he did learn some lessons. You're kind of seeing a little maturity. But, yeah, when you come into this – when you enter any race, right? Like, we always talk about the season as a marathon. If you show up to the starting gates and you're just not in as – you haven't trained as well as everyone around you, or you're not in as good a shape, it's going to negatively affect you. I mean, just look at any statistic at any advanced level you want. He's having – as we talked about D'Lo, like, he's having a really down year. He's taking more threes, I think, per 36 than any year in his career. He's shooting the worst three-point percentage since he was a rookie. He doesn't get to the line at all. Mm-hmm. Like, I think, you know, he averages, like, one free throw a game. And while his I still think he's been trying on defense, there's various cases to be made that, you know, just trying isn't always the best thing, right?
Like, trying on defense and being a little bit better as a playmaker would be awesome if he was also hitting 40% of the 8 threes he shoots a night. Like, that's kind of where I'm at. Right. Like, at the end of the day, your bread is buttered by hitting threes. And right now, your bread tastes like shit, and I want better bread.
And I think the problem with him is that, you know, he's the fourth kind of, you can argue semantics here with Jaden or other guys or Nas, but or even Vando, like, he's kind of the fourth best player, right? Or at least we thought so. Like, it's the big three with Kat, D'Lo, and Ant. And then, at least from a salary standpoint, like, it's Malik. And he's just not giving them anything close to what his salary is. And it's like, man, if you can't, what Jake just said, like, hit 40% of your threes. And go back to what I said about, you know, like, do the Wolves maybe make a fun little move to try to go for it a little bit, right? Like, go for the sixth seed, I mean. It probably comes at the expense of Malik, right? Because you can...
But what do you get for him now? That's the problem. It's not only is he not playing well, he's tanked his value. Because he's on, what, $14 million a year? Something like that. Like, no one's taking that on unless he can prove, at least for some sort of, like, 10-game stretch, that he's not... kind of, not washed, that's a stupid word, but like, that he's just completely in a funk that someone's going to be paying for the next two seasons.
Yeah, but like,
his sample size of hitting threes is massive, like, relatively massive. Well, and
this is lazy by me, but I don't know exactly what the post, like, I don't know what happened this morning or what they found out, but in the Mavericks game on Friday night, I think they lost to the Pelicans. It was really bad. And I think Tim Hardaway Jr. went down with, like, a non-contact injury. I have not looked this up and see how serious or not serious it is. But, like, let's just say he was out for a while. Like, the Mavs would take Malik Beasley. Like, yeah. I just think that there's teams that would, like – I mean, dude, the New York Knicks gave Evan Fournier, like, $85 million. So if you're going to tell me that some team wouldn't take a year and a half of Malik,
even with the
prison stuff, like – I think they would. So, but you make a good point.
But you're getting less for him. That's even if they're taking him. You don't want to just hand him off to someone because you don't want him. You want him. Like, he was being discussed as a guy who was in Ben Simmons' trades as, like, an actual real life piece that they would want.
Right.
Like,
No, that's good.
He's past that until he can prove that he's that again. And I know that maybe those trades were pipe dreams, but, like, he's a guy that if you're getting rid of him right now, it's not a straight salary dump, but it's more of like a swap for someone who's playing the way he is. And that's probably not even worth doing because, you know, that then you have to integrate a new guy and getting him up to date with the playbook and stuff. Like, you, at that point, you rather just hope Malik Beasley figures it out himself. And I have hope that he will. Maybe it's next season. Maybe it's somehow through this season. Because he can shoot the ball. Like, he didn't forget how to shoot. He just, like I said, understandable circumstances, you know, partly, and maybe more than partly, his fault to begin with. But, like, it's hard to play yourself back into shape. And I just keep going back to the Rubio thing who's just playing so well in Cleveland. And I don't think it's just the waters of Lake Minnetonka that have Rubio playing badly. It was the fact that he was out of shape as well, and it took him a whole season to get back into shape. And Bees is a hard worker. I'll give him that. He wants to be in shape as much as we want him to be in shape. So, like, if anyone's going to do it, it would probably be him.
Yeah, and that's why you know, if you're glass half full versus glass half empty, that's why you buy Malik stock, right? Because he does have that work ethic, right? He is a gym rat. It's just not falling. But yeah, I think what we're trying to say is that, you know, we talked about D'Lo having an off year shooting, but he's like the team's, at least statistically, like best defender, right? Yeah. Like Ant might not mean, like, again,
just
like
do something else. If you can't hit, like, those guys do other things, so you can stomach them not hitting shots. I want D'Lo to hit shots. Like, it would be awesome if D'Lo could start hitting shots. And there's been probably two or three games where it's like they probably win if he just hits a few more shots. The Wizards one comes to mind immediately, and there was one other one in the losing streak where it was like, man, this is just tough to handle if D'Lo is going to break shots. But, like, he's also, you know, I don't have the numbers in front of me, but it'd be up over 7 assists a game. And like we said, very good defensively. Anthony Edwards has been missing a lot of threes lately and is very, very streaky as a three-point shooter. But, like, you know, I don't have to sit here and tell you what Anthony Edwards does in terms of scoring in other ways and in terms of kind of building up the crowd and willing teams to wins when he's on. So Malik doesn't do any of those things, and that's fine because he's a shooter. But, like, is he at the moment?
Is there any, like, rapid fire? Because I was thinking about this morning, and I almost didn't want to bring it up because I'm going to sound like such a homer, but I don't know if there's anything else outside of Malik. That was the only thing I wrote down. That's been, like, truly disappointing.
Yeah, apart from the shooting as a whole, but, like, it's kind of just D'Lo and Malik, you know, like, they're the two guys that take what, 40% of Minnesota's threes, and they're both hitting well below career averages, so it's kind of those two not being able to hit shots, and that, again, blends itself in with the offense not being very good. Which is another disappointing thing. But if they started hitting shots, it'd probably be good. Like, big ball of kind of confusing at the moment.
Even like Jaden, who had a really rough start to the season, I thought he's rebounded nicely. Yep. And I know I have an affection for Jaden McDaniels, but I also think
a public player loves.
There's a restraining order. They didn't like when I sent him a wedding invite. But there's I don't think there's any player on the team who's in more of a difficult situation than him in terms of, like, I think on another team, right? Like, if he was on the Pacers or something, he would have a much higher usage rate. Or, like, if Jaden McDaniels was on the Thunder, he would probably have as many opportunities as, like, Lou Dort, yeah, right? Like,
and anointing guys so early in their careers is always, you know, fraught with danger. Just because, like, sophomore slump is a real fucking thing, man. Like, it's got a name because it's a thing that when you've been in the NBA for a year, especially late round draft picks, the team's trying to figure you out a little bit. Like, teams flop a little bit more because he's a bit handsy on defense, and teams close out that 1-2% harder on his corner threes because they know he can hit them. And none of that was present in his rookie season. And they, like, young guys figure that out. And like you said, I think he started to figure it out. And I think the benching was more encouraging than the word benching suggests. It was just kind of like a fresh start against, you know, reserve players more often than not, and a little bit more leeway to score and to do a little bit of stuff off the dribble. And that helps kind of get his shot back. He started rebounding a bit harder. The refs seem to not call as many fouls on him because he's not defending James Harden. He's defending Tim Hardaway Jr., you know, like, so I think all of the things are pointing upwards. I hope that his illness isn't too bad, because we've seen a few guys, Nick Claxton for the Nets comes to mind, who've had long-ass illnesses this year. Robert Williams from the Celtics as well had a pretty long illness, so it's going around.
Yeah, dude, if Jaden loses a bunch of weight, he's going to weigh negative pounds. Yeah. So that would be a disappointing thing. But yeah, I just, going back to that rapid-fire thing, shooting, great point. I think Malik is, I think, the most disappointing topic of the season so far. I mean, rapid fire things like
Jordan McLaughlin. I hate that Jordan McLaughlin being unplayable, rather than just like that kind of stingy backup third string point guard that we expected, who might get 5 or 10 minutes and give you a boost. That's been disappointing because I've really disliked the McLaughlin minutes all season long.
And he seems like one of the three most likable players on the team.
Right, and he's got that glorious beard, man. I just want him to succeed.
And he just really seems like a good kid. So it's kind of, this is why I'm a weak-ass analyst and not a professional. But like, it's hard sometimes to criticize him, but like, I was never on the McLaughlin hive. Like, I just never thought he was a real rotation player in the NBA. Yeah. And I think that's
if he gives you good minutes, you take it, and you kind of don't expect it because he was in the G League and whatever for a long time, and there's a reason for that.
And but his floundering, right, did lead to, you know, the introduction of Leandro Bolmaro, who defensively has been pretty much everything we thought. Again, we're just picking at nits, but like
the cat thing, talk to me on the cat thing, because that slipped my mind, and that has given me the fucking irrits all season, worse than ever.
We don't want to do a 4-hour podcast.
No, it's actually like Carl, the sun is rising out my window. So
cool, we got all day. I think this probably equals out to, like, if you look at the stats, but Carl has been their best offensive player, and Karl-Anthony Towns is still, no matter what we think of Ant, right? Like, Karl-Anthony Towns is still the team's best player.
Easily.
I've just struggled with sometimes, because I'm a big leadership nerd or management nerd or whatever, like, I've just struggled with his actions sometimes. I think he does, as I do, I think he holds himself to the level of Jokic, of Embiid. I think he thinks of himself as one of those upper echelon players, which is fine. But I think he also looks around and he sees, like, the whistle that Joel Embiid got against the Wolves compared to what he gets.
Man, so, I would have been ejected in 3 minutes in that game if I was him. Like, I understand why he's shitty. I totally understand it. I think all Wolves fans are like, we get it, Kat. Like, you get a shitty whistle, but like, you just need to handle it better because, like, I don't know how much introspection it takes because I'm not in that position, but like, you're getting these whistles, not getting them because of the way you're acting. It's so blatantly obvious that, like, they have it out for you, and maybe that's unfair, and I don't mean it in a conspiracy kind of way, but it's just like human nature that if you act like a dick to me, I'm going to act like a dick to you in whatever position of power I hold over you. And they hold the whistle in their hand. And you're being a dick every night. You're clapping the fans, you know, you're kind of cheering on the fans when they're chanting, refs, you suck. And, like, that's funny shit, man. I sit at home and I laugh at that. But, like, that's major disrespect to the guys who are blowing the whistle.
And it doesn't help, like, his teammates, right? Like, again, Karl-Anthony Towns at, like, 25 has been through more in the last, like, 18 months than I've been through in 33 years.
Yep.
So I get it, but it's kind of like being like, hey, dude, I understand why you drink so much on the weekend, but you're always hungover the next day. Like, it never, you know,
you
never
complain,
like, man,
that you're so hungover.
Right. And then you complain that you're hungover. It's like, you know, man, like, I get why you started doing mimosas at 9 a.m. and you drank till 11 p.m.
Do you though?
But then
Speaking
you puked on my shoes.
Do you know that?
Yeah, I'm bringing up what happened last weekend. So it's just like, I get why you do it, but it just, back to like the introspective self-awareness, like, it doesn't lead to anything, right?
It
like
never has.
One of the cooler moments of the season, and I love this shit, right? Like, I love to just be quiet and then just come on your podcast and yell at people who I don't like on Twitter. Like, remember when they beat the Bucks? Up until like the 48 hours before that, I know Britt Robson was pretty hard on, deservedly so, but like, that was another one of those points before the Bucks game where I think Carl had been really, really just flamboyant in how he was arguing calls and stuff leading up to it, and people were talking about how he needs to shut up and just play basketball kind of thing and not complain about calls. And then they beat the Bucks. And remember his post-game interview where he was kind of like, he basically was like, I read the tweets, like, I heard everyone what they said. Yeah. and I just came here and put my head down and shut everyone up. And it's like, yes, yes, that's what we want. Like, shut us up, you know, like make people like just put your head down. Don't complain. I mean, he still probably gets the worst whistle on the team.
And I think he saw that it didn't change when he stopped complaining. But yeah, like that's true. Years of ingrained kind of complaints. And it's the way he tries to draw fouls. He doesn't have the dark arts down in the way that he thinks he does. And in the way that Jokic and Embiid and Chris Paul and like these guys do it really well. And I get that it's annoying. We watched James Harden flop his way to 16 free throws last night. But Kat just doesn't do it well. He's so bad at flopping. And that's a skill in the NBA. And he is just, it's his worst skill. And he wants it to be something to get him 10 free throws a night. But he would get 10 free throws a night if he just kept those arms down and the head, you know, from jerking back and just went to the rim. Because when he does that, he does get fouls. When he doesn't play for a foul, that's when he gets it.
And we can go round and round, but like I said, I think we both agree that it'd be great if his antics would cool, but we also understand why his antics exist, at least in, you know, internally in his brain. My thing just kind of always goes back to, I don't have like a favorite player. I mean, I love Ant, but I do love Carl. Like Carl has also been around much longer and kept this ship, at least at remote surface level, when they should have been 5,000 meters under the sea. But, I just don't think what he does when he is upset inspires teammates, and that's like a really nerdy thing that I'm about.
You're spot on, because that's why it's so much more frustrating this season, is because it's really obvious that the rest of the guys, even if it's not complaining, but like they're so bought into like the leadership and the camaraderie aspect of the team, and that's one of the reasons why it's working so well. And he just seems kind of like removed from that for big parts of games because he's got the refs in his head, or he's got six fouls because he's trying to get one back on his opponent because they fouled him and didn't get a call, so he goes that little bit harder and he fouls them. And like it's like a blatant picture when the team is on the floor toughing out big wins and he's sitting 25 feet away on the bench, that it's like, there it is in one picture. Like, this is what happens when you don't keep your cool. And I get that it's hard to keep your cool. Like, I'm a guy who gets teched a lot when I play. But, like, you know, so I get it. Like, but it's like, that's the picture right there. It's like, you're on the sidelines standing there watching and they're toughing out a win without you.
But just
when we know that if you're out there, they could still get this win, probably easier. But, like, we just want you to be out there.
But, you know, getting 10 bad whistles and screaming and making that classic cat face and egging on the fans, like, that's just not, it's the hangover thing, right? It's just not going to lead to things you feel good about. I mean, Cat gets the worst whistle on the team, but Ant gets a pretty bad whistle too. It's much improved from his rookie season, but there's a lot of times he gets to the lane, he doesn't get a call. Mm-hmm. And he might bitch for a second, but he's back on defense. But his thing of like, if it's just not going well for me, I'm not getting the shots I want, he just locks in on a possession, gets a steal. I mean, I think back to that Taurean Prince play, or that alley-oop to Ant against the Pacers, where they got that, I think Ant blocked the shot, the ball kind of got thrown around, and then he, go back and watch this, he just sprinted by TJ McConnell, because he could sniff it. He's like, I'm going to fucking change the energy of this game. And he did it. I mean, that one-handed alley-oop that he caught was pretty much a game changer. It's like when he was getting a tough whistle and there was some Jimmy Butler bullshit against the Heat, he was like, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to back cut and I'm going to, if your kids are in the car, turn this down. I'm going to put my nuts in someone's face and I'm going to dunk on him. And that changed, the dunk didn't count, but it changed the whole energy of the game. And I want Carl to, I mean, Dane says this all the time, no center in the league can guard Carl. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So rather than complain and bitch, like, get a guy out at the three-point line, pump fake because you're such a good shooter, get to the lane and yam on someone. You know what I mean? Like, you're not going to get the crowd, you're not going to get your teammates energized by getting a whistle and getting to the free throw line. You're going to get the crowd energized by, and you know, gain your teammates' trust by making a play that just really kind of says, I'm here. I'm not listening to the bullshit. I don't care if things aren't going my way. I'm going to just take the game over by myself. And Carl has had those moments this year. But I just, going back to the disappointing thing, I think if he would have more of those moments, if he had more ant spurts, this team would, you know, really feed off that. Because again, he is their best player still. So if their best player could also be their best leader, I think that elevates this whole construction of a concrete house up another level. So that was it. I also just wanted to say Leandro Bolmaro can't shoot. That was my other disappointing thing. Like his offense is so bad.
Yeah, I really thought I don't he'd expect be kind much. Of okay. Like not good, but like 33% kind of bad, but it's like 0% kind of bad.
He's 23 games into a rookie season. I'm not talking.
Yeah, well, he's more like 3 games into a rookie season.
Right. So I think, I mean, again, it's he didn't have a summer league because of the Olympics. He really should. I remember when Dane tweeted this summer, he was like, Balmero's going to live in Des Moines, Iowa. I was like, you're a psychopath. Nope, he was actually right. Like, Balmero should be getting his just every minute he can down in Iowa, but because of injuries and because Jordan McLaughlin is probably not good, he's had to play, and his defense has been better than I thought, so that's a plus, but his offense has been worse than I mean, he's just he's creative. He kind of plays like me. Like, you know, he's got like he wears number 9. He's got like ounces of Ricky Rubio in him, but he just has no offensive game. So I'm really excited to see what a full offseason does. He is going to be a little slight prediction. He is going to be the Jaden McDaniels Summer League star of 2022. They're going to feed him the ball next summer in Vegas, and hopefully that kind of turns his offense around a little bit, because do you keep it really short, but do you see like a good player in there?
Yeah.
I know you've watched a lot more of him.
You know I stan Leo. I think he's a good player.
Okay, good.
Even offensively, like, just as a guy who knows how to like play basketball, I think is a trait that is good for a guy like him. And Jordan McLaughlin knows that too, but he's got the size to play defense as well. And the size, he's been so good rebounding as well, which is like really encouraging. I think Finch really likes that, because the team just needs all the help they can get, always rebounding the ball. So yeah, I think you're right. There's a lot of growth offensively that can be there. And you watch him in Spain and he was never like this overwhelming offensive guy, but he was definitely a guy who set the table really well, can throw some crazy passes and can hit some shots off the dribble in the mid range and as a catch and shoot 3 kind of guy. So I think he's definitely feeling out the NBA, and he's small, like he's tall and lanky, but like he's underdeveloped for an NBA player. So I do think he's one of those guys that's just going to take a little bit of time to find his feet.
And again, I just think his offense sucks, but it's not really a criticism of him as the player, because if you're a rookie, and he was, you know, a low or end of the first round rookie, all you really want for those guys to do is just buy into their role.
Yeah, just do one thing. And show me one thing for now.
Vando and, well, I guess Vando, Josh, and Jaden, but like he's pretty much the team's fourth best defender already. And like you said, he's played like 3 games. Yeah. So, I mean, Brooklyn, they relied on him a lot to just kind of be the Jordan McLaughlin role of just bring the ball up the court.
He played 25 minutes, man. Like, that's a big, you know, chunk of faith from Finch in a game that they definitely could have won against a really good team. Like, I don't think he's not getting charity minutes right now. Like, he's getting real life faith minutes.
Yeah, I mean, and they Finch puts him, you know, just wants him to pick up full court, and he turns guys and kind of just slows down a team's offense. And there was a couple possessions too. I was really glued into that game against the Nets. I don't know why. I think it's because we put our Christmas tree up. But I was all happy. But I mean, Leo was guarding James, like he was in James Harden's crotch more than an independent contractor. Like he was really up in there giving Harden the business. So I thought that was really impressive. But I just wanted to mention that.
Yeah,
I really thought that he could like shoot a jump shot.
Well, he was knocking them down in Iowa as well. He hit like 6 of 9 in the first game, then he hit like 5 in the next game, and I think he had like a really bad shooting night overall before he left and came back to the big team. But like, I think it's like his shooting mechanics are, I like to call him the frog in a blender, but like he is confident in his mechanics, but I think right now he's not confident just in his offense at all against like bigger, stronger, quicker guys. So I expect it to come along a little bit if he keeps getting minutes, because it was the same thing for Barcelona, that he was like really slow to begin the season, and then once he started to get confidence in his role and like a little bit more leeway from the coach, where it's like, if I miss three threes here, I'm not going to get yanked for the rest of the game. He started to shoot better and do everything better. So I kind of hope they start giving him, they keep giving him minutes, but then it's kind of like, well, this team's not tanking anymore. So if he's playing terribly, if he starts playing terribly, like he needs to be removed from the rotation kind of expeditiously. So yeah, it's a tightrope that he's walking at the moment.
Man, I've had a lot of fun. I miss you.
Yeah, so let's end this. I am so tired.
No, let's spin it. Let's spin it. They're 11-12. It is Sunday morning for Jake, and the sun is rising. What are you most amped for over these next, I got to do the math, what is it, like 59 games? What are you the most excited for?
Just like I mentioned before, like just more win streaks, or like, you know, sets of games that they win more than they lose, and just being a part of like this dormant franchise and fan base, because that's, you know, that's what it should all be about for all of us, I think. Like, we all do the analyst shit and the, you know, Twitter stuff that's not like it, just interacting and just being straight fanboys. But like, I enjoy being a fanboy, and
100%,
like when they're winning more games than they're losing, this franchise and Twitter fan base and, you know, people that I've met from all over the world are really, really fun when they're just hyped for the team. And I find that super exciting, and it just kind of makes every day, you know, a little bit better.
That's been the best. I mean, this has nothing to do with the Timberwolves, right? That's been the best aspect. It's December 4th for me, of these first 6-7 weeks, is that, especially after how the Rosas thing went down, I mean, I don't think you could, I mean, with the preseason expectations and all that stuff, and was how they finished the season real, and now you just got rid of your president and you have this new ownership, like, it was kind of a dark time. But these last 7 weeks, I mean, like, that Miami Heat game, shout out to our guy Jordan Dye, like getting warned sitting courtside, like,
hey, you're, if really you're listening, Jordan, you are the GOAT, man. The GOAT.
Yeah, Jordan, send us some clothes, but also too, you're the GOAT. Like, that was this fan base, and we've been saying this for years, like it's dormant. There's no better way to put it. Like, there are a lot of people that really enjoy hoops and also are knowledgeable about hoops. And you see it on a nightly basis. And that's why, you know, sometimes it is okay to just be super pissed off on a night when they blow a game to the Wizards that maybe you thought they should have won. My whole criticism is more just like, if you wake up the next day, just be like, you know what though? They're 500. Like, this team, I think, is more real than anything we've really ever seen. I think it's even more sustainable. This isn't a take, is it? Like, this is more sustainable in my eyes than any of the Tibbs stuff.
Yeah.
Because that was just, you know, sprinting with no real plan and burning up resources as fast as you could. Like, that proved to not be sustainable, whether that was a Tibbs effect or the Butler thing or whatever, or the dynamics. Like, I think you could see this team have a lot of these same players 2 years from now and just be a better version of what they are now. So I think, if I can say what I expect, like, they're 11-12. If they're 20, like, just double it. If they're 22-24, the next time we do like the half season report or whatever, I think I'd be like really excited.
I'll be jacked.
And I'll definitely do the podcast
at an earlier time so I can be more jacked. I'm sorry if my energy has been low, but like,
no, we're almost to the finish line. But you know what I mean? Like, 22-24 is probably like the 8th seed in the West. And again, this December schedule, as we've talked about ad nauseum, is so brutal. But we had talked about in January, though,
like the position they can be in if they like split their games through the rest of December. Like, that's a possibility, and that would be massive. Like, then 6th seed is a chance. If they, like, you know, can beat the Hawks the next game and kind of, you know, beat a couple of teams that maybe they shouldn't, beat Utah once, beat Denver, like, then things start to look real rosy.
And you know, the Nuggets have had more injuries, I think, than, like, the Western Conference combined. But some of those injuries are, like, end-of-season stuff. Yeah. So, like, we talked about the beginning of January, but, like, hell, February, dude, they go Nuggets, Pistons, Pistons, Kings, Kings, Bulls, Pacers, Hornets, Raptors, Grizzlies. Like, none of those teams are that good. Mm-hmm. The Bulls are really good. That's why I de-emphasize them. But, like, if they can just, as Dane put it, hold on to the rope and just tread water for the rest of 2021 and be around 500, maybe it's the 9 seed. Hell, maybe it's the 10 seed. Like you said, they just got to be better than the Kings. Because the Spurs aren't good, the Pelicans are abysmal, and the Rockets and Thunder at some point are just going to shut down guys, and they're not going to try to win games. So a playoff basketball is still very much, I mean, it's. I think I expect it more than you did in September, right?
I expect play in basketball 100%. I'll be severely disappointed if they end up the 11th seed at this point.
And I think we said this to begin the season, like if they're not in the top 10 as the season ends, people are going to lose their jobs. Rightfully so, and there's gonna be some tough decisions about long-term, you know, stability for some of these more veteran players. So I'm more bullish on them not just making the play-in game. I mean, I guess the play-in game is the 7 and 8 seed as well, but I don't think there was any chance in my mind about flirting with the 6 seed around my birthday in October. And now I think it's you know, as you see the West between Denver and, like you said, Portland, and the Lakers are abysmal. Like, there's a real chance for them to just tread water December and then really come out firing, maybe at full health when they get Bev back, January, February, and really kind of string together some wins. And maybe the old Wolves flip the calendar and they go lose those two games to the Thunder and we're just like, Jesus Christ. But for now, I think you can be really optimistic about kind of the long-term effect of this team while the short-term is... I just want to close my eyes and get through December, man. I know you want to close your eyes and go to bed, but I just want to close my eyes and get through December because the schedule doesn't get any easier on Monday with the Hawks. But 3 home games coming up, so maybe they can kind of turn it around.
Yeah, and I think that is a good stamp to put on the quarter season report. Always love having you on. You are, the vibe master, and this season's been good vibes and the occasional bad vibe, but just a vibey season. So... obviously, you know, check out Kyle on Twitter. I'm sure you follow Kyle on Twitter if you're here. Did put out one of the greatest tweets of all time after that Miami game.
The one with the heat in the locker.
Yeah,
waiting
for Anthony Edwards' autograph, which is a goated tweet. So obviously, go follow Kyle on Twitter. I am. You know, losing my marbles.
I'm losing
my marbles at this point, but yeah.
In Australia.
Go follow Kyle on Twitter. Canis Hoopers, obviously. You read Canis Hoopers. If you're here and you don't, what's wrong with you? You're stupider than me being up at 5:28 doing a podcast. So go there and then follow me.
Let's do this again at the half point, too. Yeah. I know I just interrupted you. You have the best Twitter account as well, but let's do this. Let's do these quarter reports, too, because I think they're kind of fun to...
Yeah.
I think it's fun to do a... Yeah, take stock and just kind of do a reflection point, but go back, at Jake Painting.
Yes, and obviously House and Grounds. There'll be a little insert that you would have already heard by this stage, just before the ads. So yeah, House and Grounds at Substack, houseandgrounds.substack.com, not .au. See, I'm losing my mind because that's an Australian thing. So just houseandgrounds.substack.com. Christmas bonus, you can get everything for pretty much half price if you sign up in December, so... I'm having a lot of fun over there. We're building a little community and I'm enjoying it. So go and follow that. Go and follow Kyle. Go and do all the good stuff. Kyle, thank you for coming on and thank you for getting up early over there, even though it is a little bit earlier over here for me.
Appreciate you. Go Wolves.